Following is part two of a lecture given by Father John A. Hardin, S.J., on the subject, St. Francis of Assisi and the Witness to Evangelical Poverty. Father Hardin.
Now, the four clares are, of course, the second order, but they identify themselves as completely as possible with the friars minor in terms of both personal and communal dispossession. But the by now, I dare say, I guess you when I say this, conservatively, 300 Franciscan institutes recognized by the Church. There are 4,000 religious communities in the Catholic Church, and I'm confident that at least 300 follow a Franciscan way of life. For the vast majority, except for the three of men and the four clares for women, most of them are not orders but congregations. They therefore do not take solemn vows of poverty. They therefore do not dispossess themselves of what they own, even as individuals, less still as communities. But, as I think I've already touched on, and even though we have a semester to go, but it's only every 2 weeks, and there are centuries of religious life we should still cover, I think I've mentioned this before, let me repeat it if I have, that the mind of the Roman Catholic Church is to get closer and closer to the spirit of St. Francis for all and not just the Franciscan Institutes. That's why the documentation Father Coccini is working on here, the Holy See has asked the Institute to publish. We will have at least 300, maybe 400 documents. I've read most of them over a period of 3 years. This is 16 years of documentation. I would especially recommend, well, to all of you, but particularly to those in the Franciscan tradition, including those who are not here, but who I understand will listen to the tape. For you too, I strongly recommend, especially for those in the Franciscan tradition, to read the documents of the Holy See addressed to Franciscans, and read the pleas of the Holy Father to practice the poverty of St. Francis. And this goes for all religious. This actual deprivation, as you know, right now the constitutions of most communities do not require that one give up his or her ownership when they take their vows. You retain ownership. But the mind of the Church is that, at least after last vows, that the constitutions provide for the liberty of giving up also the ownership. Now, my hope is that what is now optional will in time become obligatory. Having taken a solemn vow of poverty when I took my final vows, I can tell you, it makes a big difference to know that you own absolutely nothing and you vow never to own anything. But also, as far as communal possessions go, how well I know, how sadly well I know, and working with constitutions and chapters, the security that a community finds in owning large property and real estate, investments, all according to canon law, all legitimate. But frankly, it does not express the spirit that Saint Francis wanted his followers to practice in the imitation of the poor Christ. Dependence on God's providence, dependence on people's generosity, including that embarrassing word begging, is part of the spirit of the Gospels. So much for expropriation. First, therefore, the first perceptible feature of Franciscan spirituality is expropriation. You give up what you own as an individual and as community. Second, dependence. Dependence on the community through superiors. Now that no community in the Catholic Church has ever been approved unless there are in the rule of life provisions for practicing at least this poverty of dependence. And this is the inhuman thing which so many communities have done by allowing their religious to go on what they call open placement, to be paid a salary for the work they do, because in the process anyone who earns a salary, to the extent to which you earn, you are not dependent on superiors. And I know exactly what I'm talking about, because, as I've said, there is one book I will never publish, and that is My Life in the Society of Jesus Since the Second Vatican Council. Pray for the Jesuits. You've lost over 10,000 men since the council. This is the main reason. In fact, if I can share a motive with you, that's why I come 1,000 miles twice a month, to spare you, to help you. And the Holy See encourages me, because I know from experience what happens to religious life once dependence on superiors is replaced by making a salary or running your own life financially. Religious life, in spite of all the brightly colored books and the fancy brochures, religious life disappears. It's gone. All that's left is the ghost. But Francis was never one to do things half measure. For Francis, dependence was not only on the community, it was also on the faithful. I cannot tell you how much religious communities deprive the faithful of the merit they would otherwise gain, of the sense of solidarity between faithful and communities, by making so sure financially that they are safely provided for by investment in General Motors or General Electric or the Ford Motor Company or any other very safe stocks and bonds. And not depend on the generosity of the faithful, including begging, which need not mean going around with a tin cup I've done a lot of begging in my life, and I've never once gone out with a tin cup. Third feature of this poverty: independence of external coercion. For Francis, the poverty that he wanted, those who wish to follow the poor Christ literally, is to be poor in such a way as not to be beholden to anyone, including one's benefactors. And of course, it just never entered Francis' mind to depend on the state. At our last executive meeting of the Institute here, the day after Christmas, among the decisions we reached was that the Institute would begin to sponsor in different parts of the country, with the help of the bishops, conferences on the relationship of church and state as affecting religious institutes, particularly the growing encroachment to a point in many cases of almost total domination. Every community must look very hard to this feature: dependence on the faithful and independence of external coercion, so that you're free to do what you're supposed to do. The Jesuits are not. You've got 28 universities in the United States. Everyone is controlled by the state. Everyone. There is not one Jesuit college or university in America, or the provincial, can send a man and, well, you're going to be teaching at Loyola University next year. The provincial of Chicago no longer has that authority. He cannot remove any Jesuit from the faculty of any college in the country. I repeat, and I seldom get this personal because I love the Society of Jesus to which I belong, but I sure know what's happening. And this is why the popes, especially Pope Paul, he must have given, I'm guessing now, 20 major addresses to various groups of Franciscans during his years of the pontificate, to general chapters. And he kept stressing, hitting, insisting, go back to your poverty. It's not piety, believe me. It is survival. There's an article in, I believe, the Current Review for Religious on the relationship of the state to religious communities and the threat to our existence because of the Internal Revenue. I know I've sat on meetings and with commissions for the last 12 or more years. The government does not believe that welfare institutions, schools, hospitals, homes for the aged or the retarded, conducted by religious, have a right to exist. I've sat at national meetings discussing this. My principal work, of course, is in education. All I know is that our future is at stake, and the church keeps telling us, go back to the charism of your founder. So we hear a pious conference, a and we console ourselves, we're doing something, we maybe give up. Well, instead of 2 spoonfuls of sugar, just 1 in the coffee. So I'm practicing poverty. Independence of external coercion, and does the government have coercive powers? They can close right now all of our institutions. They've got that kind of power in their hands, legally. Fourth major feature, adaptability to apostolic needs. This, of course, was again a distinctive Franciscan feature. In the monastic tradition, though, of course, place like Monte Cassino or Montserrat or any of the great Benedictine monastic foundations, they could do apostolic work. But at least one major adaptability which they could not practice was, say, to adapt themselves to different kind of people than those who were surrounding the monastery. Because by prior definition, the monastic tradition means what it says, you're there. Well, Francis, you go out. And finally, laboriousness. If there is one thing that we can safely say was anathema in the vocabulary of St. Francis, it was laziness. The gentle Francis, you didn't think he had those words in his vocabulary, but he did. Let's say he did not like lazy monks, or to change the gender, lazy nuns. Laboriousness. Poor people work. So we're poor. So we work. So we get tired. So what? What do you expect? Now the purpose. There are 3 levels of purpose as Francis envisioned his poverty. Now some of these belong to every religious tradition and are simply inherent in the practice of poverty at all. Others are more distinctively Franciscan. Let me go over each and point out where necessary the distinctive Franciscan perspective. First, let me note, when we speak of the purpose being religious, moral, and apostolic, to know what we're talking about. Religious has to do with God. Moral has to do with, well, with behavior, mainly, but not entirely, the self. And the apostolic has to do with others. What is the religious value of poverty? In other words, what has poverty got to do with my relationship with God? Francis would say, plenty. First, poverty gives a person freedom for and in prayer. In order to ask a prosaic question, who would you say prays more, the rich people or the poor people in general? Why? Because they're in need. Right? Again, speaking in general, who would you say prayed more, the successful people or the unsuccessful? Who do you think would pray more, the people who were honored and respected or those who are humiliated and despised? Okay? Poverty brings you to God on your knees. In fact, poverty bends your knees. I have in my life, as a priest, dealt with some very wealthy people. I've dealt with poor people. Unless the wealthy people are extraordinarily gifted with God's grace, and they are the exception, they make you feel their wealth and their power from the first minute of conversation. Like what? Like making you wait. And you can see them on their conditions. And the poor, grateful for the letter, for a phone call, for the least favor. So, it makes us free. Poverty then, this is Francis' version, poverty ensures a sense of dependence on God. And for Francis, that's the main purpose of the religious life. To pray. Why become a religious? To pray. Well, can't I pray without becoming a religious? Sure you can. But Francis would say, if you practice poverty, especially the kind that he urged on his followers, you can pray better. Secondly, increased love of God. Now you might say, what has poverty got to do with the increased love of God? Well, I would say everything. Change the genitive. What would you suggest that the sentence could read if a person is not poor? Increased love of what? For a person who is not poor, who is rich, of creatures, right? We tend to love what we have. Memorize that. We tend to love what we have. And the more we have of this world's goods, honest, it's very hard, or you can say it with your lips, very hard to have the heart detached from what you know is yours. Thirdly, humility of spirit. There is only one, as Acampus tells us, royal road to humility, and that is humiliation. If humility is the goal, humiliations are the means. All right. Another set of questions. Which people are more humiliated, the poor or the rich? Which people are more humiliated, the educated or the uneducated? Which people are more humiliated, the intelligent or the ignorant? Which people are more humiliated? Those who have a standing in society, have a lot of property, or those who have no standing and no property? Those with no standing and no property. Okay? Oh, well, I know. I tell you about my experience in Louisville. I don't want to repeat my stories. I know a lot of them. I was writing on the Protestants, and I wanted to buy some books at the Baptist bookstore. Sure I didn't tell you this?
Okay.
I got $25 from superiors to buy books. That was to both pay for my transportation, about $2.50 each way, from where I lived in Indiana to Louisville, and buy, say, $20 worth of books. I should have bought a round-trip ticket. I didn't. One way in that I was going to save enough money from my expenditure in the bookstore to get back. I saw so many wonderful books in the Baptist bookstore, and by the time I got back to the Greyhound station, I was a dollar short, about a dollar and a half short, of the $2.50 that I needed for the bus trip. So I figured, well, I'm a priest, I'll talk to the ticket agent. I said, I don't have a $2 for the ticket. I'm a Catholic priest. I think about I had a dollar and a quarter. Could you trust me for the other dollar and a quarter? And I'll make sure you get it back by return mail. Said, no. There were people standing behind me. Next. So I didn't want to argue with him. And he saw that I was still standing there. He said, if you're a priest, there's a cathedral down the road. Talk to them. So I figured I got to get home. So I went to the cathedral rectory. I pressed the doorbell. I'd never been there before. And a priest, a young priest, came to the door, and I said, Father, you've probably heard this story before, but I need about a dollar and a quarter for my trip back to West Baden, Indiana. I'm short on money for my return trip. He looked at me. Then he couldn't keep his eyes off the bag that I was carrying. Those Baptists, they had a great big sign all over this bag, Baptist Bookstore. So he said, come in. I literally recited the prayers at the foot of the altar in Latin to convince him I was a priest. He gave me $2. I could tell the way he was looking. He never thought he'd see that money again. Sometimes it would be good just to ask for a few handouts to see how it feels. Humility of spirit. Poor people are humiliated. Believe me.
Please turn over to side B and push the play button immediately without rewinding the tape.